AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Now, Rebuilding Life After Brain Injury tells the survival story of Sheena McDonald, who in 1999 was hit by a police van and suffered a very severe brain injury. Well, Sheena's story is told from her own personal standpoint and also from two further unique and invaluable perspectives. Sheena has agreed to be here to tell us her story, and it's great to have you on the show, Sheena.
Thank you.
So we're talking.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. We're talking 20 years ago now. Do you remember what happened on that day?
No. I remember what I was doing beforehand. I went to a lecture in central London given by the late film censor. And then I imagine, I would get a taxi home because it was after 11 o'clock. And the taxis always get stuck in tailbacks near where I lived at the time. So I guess I got out of the taxi and decided to walk the last quarter mile home and crossed the road and was hit. I don't remember this. The thing is, you know, that you said there are three voices, and mine is predictably the most detached one because I remember nothing.
Mm.
I've had to get all the information from hospital records, police records, and people who told me what happened.
So yeah,
I know
course.
That I was hit by a police van driving on the wrong side of the road. And fortunately for me, I didn't die, but I did suffer, as you said, a very severe head injury.
Was there a massive gap then after that? Were you in a coma for a while?
I was in a coma for a while, and then after that, and this is very typical of the very many people who actually suffer a head injury or a brain injury, whether it's externally induced like mine or internally, you go through a period of what's called post-traumatic amnesia. The PTA, they call it, which is not parent-teacher association, is post-traumatic amnesia.
Yeah.
And then I had a very compromised memory for a very long time. The thing about rebuilding life after brain injury is that it takes a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. Now, the two voices that we talk about, one is Alan Little, who was a BBC journalist and now your husband.
Yes,
so he, does he talk in the book about things from his perspective? Because obviously, like you say, you couldn't remember a lot, but it must have been awful for him.
I think it was much worse for him in a way, because I don't remember anything, neither the pain nor the bruising. He was in Russia. We'd been a sort of an item for 5 years, but we'd never lived in the same country, and at that time he was living in Moscow, and a friend phoned him, and he dashed back to London as quickly as he was able to. He got back the following day at night, on a Saturday night, and came to intensive care at the University College Hospital, and he said it was full of the usual Saturday night. Well, not so much intensive care, but the hospital was full of the usual Saturday night drunks and fisticuff victims. And he came in and he thought it wasn't me. He didn't recognise me.
Oh, dear.
Because I was so... My face had blown up. It was apparently blue. My brother, actually, had been there earlier. He said I looked like a big blue football.
Wow.
And Alan eventually recognised my hairline and my feet. I don't know why, but there you go. And he stayed. He didn't walk away. I mean, I think a lot of relationships, be they marriages or whatever, don't survive this kind of injury because it takes such a long time and you go through so many rather antisocial stages on the road to recovery. And, of course, he didn't know that things would ever get better. Fortunately, they did, but he didn't know that.
Could they not tell you at the time? Did they just say, you know, we'll have to see how Sheena does, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank goodness you did get better. But it must have been difficult because I suppose your partner then, and now your husband, became a carer, didn't he?
That's really who... The book was the idea of our clinical neuropsychologist. And the book is really to inform and possibly help people who were catapulted into Alan's situation, because he was at the time a full-time BBC employee and suddenly became a principal carer as well. And he said he went to bookshops looking for something that would give him advice, or and he couldn't find anything. So we wrote this, and hopefully it may encourage or at least anyone who reads it will have a realistic expectation of how what hard work it is being a carer.
Yeah, but also of hope, because you are so much better now.
Yes, but a few years after the injury, I made a documentary with Roger Grafe, and in the course of it, I interviewed various people, you know, my old neurologist and so on, and Jonathan Miller, who, before he became a renowned theatre and opera director, was a neurologist. Mm-hmm. And I said, how do you think I recovered when many don't? And he said, luck.
Really? It's not strength of character, not positivity, just luck.
Well, Gail Robinson, who was our clinical neuropsychologist, in her contribution, she writes about a relatively new concept, which is called cognitive reserve, and that refers to people who have an active, curious, educated jackdaw of a brain have a much better chance of regaining normality. Mm. And that's me. I mean, being a journalist, well, you know this. You know, you have an awful lot of interests and information, and you know, your brain's a very variegated organ.
Yeah.
So yes, to a degree, I think it wasn't so much character. Well, yes, I suppose it was character, but I have no. I couldn't say I wished myself well. Of course, I did. But when I read what Alan had written in the book, I was chastened, because I was clearly very hard to live with.
Oh, but through no fault of your own, clearly.
No, but that's the reality for anybody who's trying to rebuild a life after brain injury.
Mm, yeah, yeah. One of the things that I know you wanted us to ask is you go through antisocial stages. What did you mean by that?
Oh, I became very selfish and needy, which I'd never been, never at all. I mean, I was an independent journalist. As I said, Alan and I had never lived together, but he did, the BBC gave him time off to look after me for a few months, and I became very, very demanding. And if he was late home, I'd be very grumpy, and he found it very. He writes about how in the book sometimes he just had to go and walk around the block because I was so difficult. And then, because initially in hospital my brain had forgotten how to swallow, so I couldn't eat, and I lost a lot of weight. And when I was able to eat again, I put on a huge amount of weight, I don't know. I mean, you know. It's. I'm still carrying a bit too much weight, actually, but it's more or less back to normal now. But one does go through these self-centered and uncharacteristic phases, which I think must discourage and deter a lot of carers because they think this isn't the person I've married or loved or. This is a different person, and they don't know. Alan didn't know that I would ever recover the character that he originally knew.
Yeah,
but remarkably, I did, and even more remarkably, he proposed. And
oh, that's wonderful!
I think it's 13 years now. Well, we'd been together for 5 years. Yeah, no, it must be more than that. Isn't that terrible? I can't remember.
A long time, let's say.
13 years, I think, yeah.
Wow. And how were other people with you? Because the thing is, I always think with any degree of that sort of trauma, it's not like you've got your arm in a sling, or, you know, people can't see the injury. So did people treat you differently?
Well, of course, people who didn't know what had happened just treated me as an ordinary person. But for a long time, for a very long time, people were... You know, there's this way with sometimes with children or with sick people, people say, "How are you?" in that kind of
condescending way. Yeah,
but yes, it's, and it, I won't name her, but a very famous broadcaster, many years after, well, I say many, I mean let's say 6 or 7 years after the original injury, I bumped into her in BBC reception. I didn't know her at all. And she said, "It's Sheena, isn't it?" I said, "Yes." She said, "How are you?" And I thought, "Oh, blimey." I said, I'm incredibly well, thank you very much indeed." Because you don't want to be pitied or looked down on. But now nobody remembers at all. I mean, for quite a few years, people would say, "You had that terrible accident, didn't you?" And I always say, "Well, yes, but I don't call it an accident. I refer to it as an injury. I don't think driving on the wrong side of the road is an accident. I think people know they're doing it, but it's not a book about the police, really.
Just one question on that, and it will just be one question. But is that what they were doing? Were they rushing to get to a crime scene then, the police?
Well, I don't know, but allegedly they were on the wrong side of the road because they were rushing to get to a pub brawl in North London.
Uh-huh,
but okay. I can't verify that. I mean, anyway, that was their story.
Yeah, okay. And even after you started to get better, apparently you had chronic fatigue for almost 3 years afterwards. That's supposed to be awful.
Yes, I did. It wasn't that I felt sleepier. I simply had to sleep every afternoon. But interestingly, the Crime Prosecution Service case against the police driver who was charged with driving without due care and attention, which I thought was, anyway, driving without due care and attention, and it was thrown out. And I took a civil case against them, supported by the NUJ's, supported by the NUJ through their lawyers. And it was maybe 3 months before we were due to go to court, which I wasn't looking forward to, because not remembering anything at all about the injury and not very much about the subsequent weeks and months, I didn't think I'd be able to say very much. And they suddenly offered to settle out of court.
Oh.
And my lawyer said, "Well," he said, "you can accept it. You could get four times as much as they're offering if you want to go to court." And I said, "I don't want to go to court," because to offer without going to court for me seemed to be a tacit admission of culpability. And that was that. And the same week, my fatigue lifted.
Oh, wow.
And I mentioned this to my hairdresser. He said, "Well, clearly the two are connected.
Yeah.
You know, psychology and physiology are very holistic."
Yeah, that was obviously weighing very heavily on you. And
it must have been. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's good news. That's really good news. And can I ask you, Sheena, what is Dream Talk?
Dream Talk is Alan's neologism. It was his word for... I don't remember it at all, but when I came to... After being in a coma, I began to talk, but it didn't make any sense. And he called that dream talk. So I was using, grammatically, I was right, but it didn't make any sense at all. So, and there are instances in the book. I'm just having a look to see if I can find. Yeah. So I would say things like, I don't know, just rubbish. My plate's come today. complete nonsense. But, as I say, grammatically, absolutely correct.
Yeah, yeah.
So we wanted to actually call the book Dream Talk, but because it was published by a psychology imprint, they wanted to call it Rebuilding Life After Brain Injury. You know, they wanted it to be what it says in the tin.
Yes, exactly.
And so the subtitle is Dream Talk.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good one. Well, you wrote the book, as you said earlier, because your eventual outcome surprised professionals, and I know that you want to help other people and raise awareness, because brain injury is, although it's relatively common, it's not very much talked about, is it?
No, it's not talked about. And to be honest... I'd never really thought about it, but we published the book earlier this year, and we were invited to do an event, the three of us, Alan and Gail and myself, at the Edinburgh International Book Festival, and we were told that we would be in the biggest venue, which seats 750, at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. And I thought, no one will come to that at 10 o'clock. Well, the tent was absolutely full. And a lot of the questions were actually to Gail. And afterwards, when we were signing books, and we signed an awful lot of books, everybody who bought a book and wanted them signed had some experience, either their own experience of brain injury or a relative or a friend. And I realized that those are the people who bought the tickets because they wanted more information to get scientific, if you like, to get the neuropsychological information was more important than hearing Alan and my personal story.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think it isn't much spoken of. And also it's very, very various because every single case is different. The only thing that's common to all is that it takes much longer than you anticipate to get back to normal and get back to work.
Yeah.
And you go through these rather unpleasant stages.
Yeah. Are you back at work?
Yes, although at the time, and this is perhaps part of my cognitive reserve, I mean, I've only actually had a job for 18 months of my life. At the beginning of my working life, I worked for the BBC. And with the arrogance of youth, I thought this is all going too slowly. And I went freelance. So I've always been freelance, and I still am.
Ah.
And at the moment, funnily enough, I'm working on a programme about global road safety. Nothing at all to do with me, but the United Nations,
right,
10 years ago, declared a decade of action on global road safety because the number of people killed and maimed and injured every year is unsupportable.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 years on, I suggested to the World Service that we should do a follow-up. So that's what we're planning.
Amazing.
And actually, I don't think the figures are very much better. In fact, they aren't. The figures are what they were 10 years ago. But the officials say, well, there are more cars and there are more roads. So the fact that the figures haven't gone up shows a degree of progress. But,
that makes,
you know, 3,000 deaths a day around the world
is a lot,
is
isn't
not
it?
Good.
No, it's not good at all. No. Well, the book is called, we'll say Dream Talk, Rebuilding Life After Brain Injury, by Sheena McDonald and, of course, by Gail Robinson and Alan Little. Sheena is talking to us now. You can buy the book from our website, tre.radio. Simply click on the bookshop banner and you can buy it straight away. Sheena, thank you for telling us your story. I think it's a great idea for a book because it's so unprecedented. I mean, you and Alan suddenly find yourself in a world that you're not used to, and like you say, there was no books out there, so at least there is something to help people now.
Well, I hope it does. I just finished on a little example of the nonsense I was talking. So I said, I get to present my comfort tomorrow, and Alan says, what's that? And I say, I'd like to go home soon.
Oh.
He says, we will go home soon. And I say, that's like the statue. He says, what statue? And I say, you know, like the holy animal. And he says, why, you mean a cow? And I say, could be a cow or a kitten or a hen. I mean, Dream Talk's one word, nonsense is the other.
He obviously got used to it.
I don't do it now.
Oh, I do things like that all the time, and I've got no excuse at all. I just talk gibberish.
No, not possible.
Oh, well, bless you, Sheena, for being on the show. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your interest.
Take care. Bye-bye.